May it please the court, my name is Helen Sigmund and my co-counsel James Lester is here as our Cynthia Yeomans, the personal representative of Cynthia Neely's estate and Suzanne McClure. The trial court erred as a matter of law in reopening this domestic relations case with the decree entered 37 years previously and both parties were deceased. The decree was not ambiguous, and there was no provision for a wife to sign a deed to the property to husband. Thus, the trial court's order needs to be reversed and remanded with directions for the partition action to proceed in this case. One clarification in this matter is that this is not an enforcement matter. Even if it were an enforcement matter, we're really stretching time to go back 37 years. What the trial court did in this case was actually modify the decree because it made no provision with regard to the real property. Now, another error in this case, error of law, was for the trial court to allow Judge Smith to testify. It was error because first, the trial court should have known whether the decree was ambiguous or not. His language was, well, if I find it to be ambiguous, then I'll, you know, consider his testimony. But the trial court should not have allowed the judge who presided in the case to testify in any regard. That is clear from People versus Bilkey.
Well, Bilkey didn't categorically preclude testimony, did it?
It didn't categorically preclude it, but it said it was harmless error in that case. I think in this case where you have the trial judge saying, well, I'm going to decide whether I think this language is ambiguous or not. Clearly, the language in this case was not ambiguous. There was no mention of wife having to transfer her interest in this real property. So that's a major difference in this case. And the trial court's reliance on KMAC, which said, oh, KMAC was self-executing, KMAC is distinguishable from this case because KMAC had the parties have an agreement. There was clear language in KMAC saying each party shall execute any and all deeds or other documents or perform any other acts which may be required. That wasn't the case in this decree. It specifically limited it to personal property and said that the clerk of the court could transfer it within 30 days.
Well, Judge Smith was not oblivious to the property, 160 acres, when he entered his decree in, I guess it was 1974, was he?
He talked at length about the property. And clearly,
and it seemed to be going in the direction, although he did not explicitly say it, that this is not marital property, it's the husband's premarital property. That's where he was going. He just didn't say it.
He didn't say it, and he didn't order wife to transfer an interest in it. And then in his testimony, which seemed to be very self-serving, was, oh, I knew it was jointly titled. Well, if he knew it was jointly titled, he should have had the wife transfer the property. You know, In re Altman was decided about the same time, and in that case, where husband had transferred an interest of separate property into both names, it was considered to be a marital gift, and the Altman court specifically had wife transfer that property back. So here we have a decree which it seems clear that Judge Smith made an error. If you want to look at his testimony, we can't ignore it. It shouldn't be considered, but he made a mistake. If he wanted to give that property to husband, he should have had wife transfer it, and nobody appealed it. So wife's name remains on the property, and that's there was no order for it to be transferred. Therefore, we don't have Rule 70 available to transfer this property because Rule 70 only applies for enforcement of an order. This is a modification of Judge Smith's decree.
The trial court found that there was an ambiguity in the order, and that's why it allowed Judge Smith's testimony.
And you can look at that decree and see it's not ambiguous.
If I can't tell what Judge Smith intended to do with respect to this 160 acres, which he does talk about at length in the decree, does that result in the decree being ambiguous? It isn't like he ignored it. He talked a lot about it. I don't know what he exactly intended to do. So to me, it's uncertain, which to me is equal to, might be equal to ambiguous.
Well, I disagree with that because it seems to me, he talked about the 160 acres. He said it was husband's prior to the marriage. Mm-hmm. He didn't make any mention. I mean, it's really a treatise. This is like a everything that could go wrong did go wrong in this case because you have the court reporter sick and so he waits 4 months to write the decree. But he talks about this 160 acres and he decides, he doesn't say it, but it seems to me clear that he thought it was just in husband's name. And that's why he said the decree is a lien on the 20-acre parcel that includes the home and the swimming pool.
So then he was laboring under a mistake of fact.
He was, and that was not appealed. So we have a case in which the order does not require wife to sign this, and you know that there's a mistake, and so we go forward. We go forward, and that's what wife's estate has done. Husband, at any time, he paid her too, right? He paid her.
Right.
And but it's clear that he didn't do anything after he paid her to require her to sign the deed to the property.
5 years later, I think his lawyer did, but it was...
After he died, mm-hmm. his lawyer went to her and said, sign this. And no one knows, because both of these parties are gone, no one knows what his intent was. You know, he could have intended to keep it in both names. That could have been his intent.
Whose intent? Judge Smith's?
The husband's. You know, if he doesn't want to enforce his rights, because wife's name is still on the property, that's what distinguishes this case. For judge, for the trial court in this case to say wife should have done something, when her name's on the property is the error in this case. Wife still has this, or we're hoping you remand this and direct the partition action to go forward, but her name's on the property. So she wasn't required to pursue some kind of judgment against her husband. She didn't have to go back and say, oh, well, you forgot this other 140 acres. Her name's still on the property. It's up to husband to take some action to change that and to get her name off. And that's where laches comes in. He's done nothing. But in any event, the divorce case is dead, really dead. When both parties are deceased, it's 37 years later. Property is decided within 6 months because you have Rule 60B. This isn't a clerical error. This isn't a matter of interest. This is a modification, and it shouldn't be happening 37 years later after both parties are deceased. I'd like to reserve my remaining 7 minutes.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Chris Mayer, part number 33040, representing the appellee. With this case, both at the trial level and, of course, here on appeal, really emphasizes the purpose of courts in being the bulwark for preventing manifest injustices that can occur when form is put over substance, particularly in the area of real property ownership. Courts determine ownership in the sense of who is the real equitable owner when there is some contrary information or evidence based on title. Not uncommon, certainly what we have here, what we had in the Kamek case that was on all fours to this case. The interesting thing here in looking at what is being appealed specifically is that all of the assignments of error relate to the conclusions of law. None of the findings of fact of the trial court were challenged. They are all unchallenged, both at the trial level when we had the hearing regarding our motion to quiet title, to reopen the divorce case and quiet title in the husband, but also on appeal. So all of the findings of fact that the trial court entered are to be taken by this court as fact, unchallenged. Those facts are
Well, one of those is, and it seems to me most important, is whether the order entered by Judge Smith in 1974, I think it was ambiguous, so that it could be clarified by his testimony afterwards, or whether, as counsel argues, it wasn't ambiguous, it just omitted to deal with this property.
Absolutely. And interestingly, one of the areas where I think we agree is that both sides believe that the decree is unambiguous. Of course, we take very different
versions of that. Well, if it was unambiguous, why was Judge Smith's testimony even considered by the trial court?
Well, and I believe that Judge Gonzalez at the trial level decided that because there was no enforcement mechanism clearly stated in the decree, there is ambiguity in the decree. It doesn't relate to who was awarded the property and what the wife's interest in the property was, because the decree is very clear on that point. The decree clearly states that this shall constitute a lien on the property.
How does that deal with the other 140 acres?
Right. The as you mentioned earlier, the Judge Smith in his decree went into great detail about the property. He describes the fact that Sonny Dickerson owned it before he got married, brought it into the marriage, that the parties together built a pool and a cabin on the house, on the property. The
20-acre parcel.
The 20-acre parcel. And he even describes the parties. He says in Judge Smith's testimony, said that the parties came to him, he recalled, asking that be quantified as a monetary award. In his transcript, that's how he recalled the testimony. So the question of ambiguity, I think, was helpful to Judge Gonzalez at the trial level, because there was a failure on the part of the Judge Smith to put in the decree a typical provision at the end of it to allow the clerk to do what's normally called a commissioner's deed, to carry out a transfer of real property if the parties don't do it themselves.
What language in the decree indicates that the wife should transfer to the husband the other 140 acres of the Antelope Ranch?
Well, the word conveyance is used. At the very end, there is the standard boilerplate language that is put in these divorce decrees that we've all seen, and it describes the obligation of both parties to transfer property and to convey property. Of course, it uses the word personal.
Yeah.
It does use the word personal. That's where the ambiguity is. No question about it. We don't dispute that there's ambiguity in that part. We argue, however, that the award of property was not ambiguous, because it's clearly described as a lien interest, and it describes the amount of money that has to be paid to extinguish that lien interest.
With respect to the 20-acre parcel, but where does the decree address the other 140 acres? Where does the decree suggest? I mean, I think where Judge Smith was clearly going when I read this, he was trying to say this was not marital property. Had he specifically said that, we probably wouldn't be here today, although there might have been an appeal of that order 37 years ago. I don't know if the law was even then about marital property. But he never quite got there.
And that may be what Judge Gonzalez had an issue with on ambiguity. That very point, that he never actually came out and said, this is Sonny Dickerson's separate property, but he describes it as his separate property, and then seems to carve out the 20 acres and then value that and set up a lien interest. So because he didn't get specific enough, I would acknowledge that's perhaps the reasoning for Judge Smith saying, or Judge Gonzalez saying, I want to hear from Judge Smith. And the case law is very clear. This Bilkey case, if you review the Bilkey case that was cited as being for the proposition by an appellant that it is against public policy for a judge to be a witness in a case, clearly carves out a very important exception. That exception is one that is exactly what we have in this case.
He's clarifying the decree. Or is he modifying the decree? And it's...
Well, he's not modifying it if he's saying that's what I meant, that's what I tried to say, maybe I didn't say it very articulately, but that's not a modification. He's clarifying. He's saying this is what I meant to do, that's what I tried to do, I'm sorry I didn't say it very well. How is that a modification? We're not changing anything. We are enforcing what was inarticulately said by the trial judge in his divorce decree.
The modification is after 37 years, I guess the property remained in the wife's interest, and it was never, whatever he intended, was never carried out.
Right. Used by the husband, used by the husband's heirs, wife, and we never got to this point. Mm-hmm. We never got to the point where we could, and we offered to do this and reserve this issue, that if you want to get to the point of adverse possession of all these other issues, we'll go there. But and Kamek apparently, you know, had discussed the fact that the wife was off the property and the husband continued to use it. But here, Judge Gonzalez felt we never even needed to go there.
Right.
We don't need to get to that point of adverse possession because of the self-executing nature of a divorce decree.
So what was self-executing about this decree? Where did it self-execute that the wife should have conveyed that interest in the 140 acres to the husband?
Well, it was self-executing at the time it was entered that it was a lien interest. It was a lien interest only. So whether or not the decree clearly said, wife, you must transfer title to husband, the fact that it didn't say that clearly doesn't mean it's not self-executing. Well, it's still self-executing.
Well, instead it says you only have a lien interest in this 20 acres. You could read it that way.
Well, it says that. That's clear.
That's explicit.
That's explicit. That it is a lien interest.
In only 20 acres.
It doesn't say only 20 acres.
Okay.
I don't think. It says...
I'm sorry, based on the value of the 20 acres.
Based on the valuation of the 20 acres. Right.
But Kamek is different, isn't it, though? Because in Kamek, there was no question, at least according to our division's opinion, there was no question that the intent of the parties was that the husband end up with the property. That was clearly manifested in their separation agreement or their divorce settlement agreement. Here, Judge, as we said, Judge Smith wasn't as expressed as the parties have been in Kamek about who ends up with the property.
I would argue that that's a similarity of Kamek. I think in this case, after you look at Judge Smith's testimony, I think it appears that even in this case, like Kamek, the parties appeared to agree at the trial that it would be husband's property and that wife would receive a monetary award to be paid off at $150 a month, $7,930.
Because that's how she performed after the decree was entered.
She accepted the payments. She didn't dispute it. It's not disputed that there was a final payment accepted. None of that is disputed.
Right.
And so I don't think that that's a dissimilarity in Kamek. It's a similarity. The only argument that has been raised that Kamek doesn't apply on all fours to this case, it's almost virtually... It's hard to find a case, I've never found a case where you have facts so similar, is the issue that there was a separation agreement incorporated in the decree. Here we had a trial, and the findings incorporated in the decree. So why would it matter? Appellant's arguing you can't let Kamek control this case because we had a trial here. There they had a separation agreement. But it's clear in the case law, and we've cited this, that a decree is no less enforceable, no less than order of the court, than if it's a result of trial, than it is a result of a separation agreement. And there's no logical reason to distinguish between the two that anyone has even argued. There's no argument in the briefing that you would somehow give some less import or enforcement to a decree from a court because it resulted from a trial rather than a separation agreement. I would think it might even, if you're going to argue, it would be more enforceable because it was the result of contested information being put forth in a trial. Parties can be coerced, and there may be some reason to suspect that a separation agreement may not be as enforceable as the result of a trial. So I don't think, but the case law shows you shouldn't treat either one of them any different. And Kamek doesn't suggest that there's any difference between the two.
In Kamek, the intention of the parties, it was quite clear from the separation agreement that the property that the husband occupied at the time of the divorce was intended to be the husband's property. There's no ambiguity there. Here, we have a lien interest given to the wife, which apparently would be extinguished upon the making of the final payment, which was made. So once the lien interest is extinguished, what does the, what exactly would the wife have had left in this property? Presumably, you would say nothing.
Right, nothing.
Yet the title remained in her name. Was it incumbent upon the husband or his lawyer at the time to seek some kind of release?
I think he tried. There's testimony that his attorney may have drafted. Judge Cook, the attorney, Mr. Dunn, says he prepared one. He wasn't sure if he sent it before Sonny died. He was sure that he sent one after Sonny died.
Mm-hmm.
The appellant even admits that the one after he died that was sent to her, the deed, mm-hmm. for the wife to sign, she didn't sign.
But no action was taken by the husband's estate to try to...
No legal action. But there was certainly outside the court, there was effort. But this court, or the trial court of this court, if it reverses the trial court, would be upholding this resistance of the wife. Kamek didn't raise any issues of... That was 6 years after he died. And so there was no effort there to get it. They argued the same thing in Kamek. The wife argued that the husband should have taken action. They said, latches, statute of limitations, does not apply when there's self-executing decree. So if the decree is self-executing, the failure of the husband to take legal action to come in and try to quiet title does not matter.
Mr. Mayor, is the principle that security follows the debt somewhat applicable here? Once the debt is extinguished, the security no longer applies?
I think so, yes. I mean, I think that that's clearly...
It's similar to a deed of trust, it seems to me. You execute a deed of trust, you grant a bank a lien interest, but we know, even though they are the owner, so to speak, it's an equitable ownership only. Once the debt's paid off, they don't have any interest in it anymore.
Correct. Yeah, I think that's what Judge Smith certainly had in his mind. He was applying perhaps more financial or principles that are commonly seen in real estate transactions to this divorce decree. Maybe that was a different way of doing it, but he certainly was entitled to do it that way. And all we've been trying to do is quiet title to this property in the equitable owner. The naked title interest is all it. That's all it is. A piece of paper that has her name on it. That's all it's ever been. And she paid, the wife received a complete payment exactly as the court had ordered, and now her heirs are trying to get a windfall by receiving a property ownership of 160 acres of property that was resolved a long time ago, equitably. And this court, just like the trial court, should uphold the intention of Sonny Dickerson and what he did and after the divorce. It was awarded to him, and he's got a will, and he wants to pass that on to his heirs. That's all going to be controverted, his intention, his desires, and what the court did in that decree, that divorce decree, is all turned up upside its head, and form is being put over substance if the wife's heirs are allowed to come in and say, well, we own a whole bunch, because guess what? The name never got removed, even though it was the wife that apparently they didn't even acknowledge, didn't sign the deed, was put, you know, there was an effort made, clearly, to have her sign it. So it would be a rewarding of wrongful behavior to reverse the trial court's ruling. Thank you.
Thank you.
An effort made to have her sign after Mr. Dickerson is dead, during his lifetime, we have no evidence of any attempt that he's made to have her change title. None. What we have here is, Mr. Mayor talks about manifest injustice. What about this other 140 acres that Judge Smith obviously was not aware of? He can say he was aware of it, but 37 years later, are you going to remember the specifics of meeting with counsel and chambers and talking about a 20 acres parcel? I don't think so. I think it defies...
Well, there's no contradiction to what Judge Smith said, though, is there?
There's no one to contradict him.
That's the point. If there's no evidence to contradict him, how can we go behind what he said?
Well, this is the whole problem. We should not be opening up a divorce action 37 years later after both parties are dead. how many divorce actions are going to be opened up on, and this is clearly a modification of what the decree said. I think Judge Smith was wrong. If his intent was to say Mr. Dickerson gets his property, then he was wrong. He didn't do it. And you only have so much time. The law requires finality, and this is beyond final here. Both parties are deceased. It's amazing they were able to find Judge Smith.
Well, the matter was certainly, contrary to what you say, he wasn't oblivious to the 160 acres. You agree with that? He talked about it.
The decree is clear. It is also clear he only thought wife had deserved to die on the 20 acres.
Right. And therefore, it is a matter that was related to the litigation in 1974, because he talked about it. So why can't, under our case law, which says the dissolution action remains under the jurisdiction of the court until all matters arising out of litigation are resolved, and I'm quoting there from that Mockelman case, which is quoting some other case, why doesn't that apply here? The matter wasn't resolved. The judge left it either negligently or whatever, for whatever reason, they didn't quite pull the string on dealing with the other acreage.
He not only didn't pull the string, he didn't provide for it specifically in the decree. It's left out there, and the title is very important in this case. That's what people rely on, are titles to property. And for Mr. Mayor to say, oh, we tried to do something, it required wife's heirs to file this partition action. Mr. Mayor didn't do anything in this divorce case after Mr. Dickerson died. Mr. Dunn didn't do anything. You know, that's where I see the problem in this case, is reopening this divorce action when we've had 37 years of this woman being jointly titled on this property with Mr. Dickerson.
But having taken no action to occupy the property, right? It was always in the custody, I understand, of Mr. Dickerson's heirs.
But adverse possession, if you are a titled owner to that property, then you don't have to take action. They have to specifically do something to remove you, but as a titled owner, she is in a different position. That, you know, that part of the case wasn't, you know, decided because a shortcut was used, I think. And it really bothers me to hear this manifest injustice when really Ms. Dickerson is out of this 140 acres because of Judge Smith's inappropriate analysis, because he's saying, you know, it's clear to me he's saying there's a lien on the property because he didn't think she was titled. Why else say there's a lien on the property? He had to have thought that her name wasn't on the property. And for then him to testify then that, oh, I knew her name was on the property, why wouldn't he order her to transfer her name, sign off on the property?
Because there was the installment payments to be made.
Well, he could have said after the last payment then, but he didn't address the property at all. He only said title to the personal property. And so, you know, we are all human, we all make mistakes, but this isn't a case that you should reopen a divorce case, which clearly Rule 60B says, you know, properties are decided after 6 months. You can't reopen these cases. There are many cases that we cited in there that, you know, you don't reopen it. Zlatan was one. That's what I see this case as, not an ambiguous one. We can read this. Judge Smith's an intelligent person, like you say, goes on at length about all of this stuff. But it's clear he just was talking about transferring personal property. There's not an ambiguity there. What Mr. Mayor wants you to do is say, oh, because my client didn't get what they wanted out of this decree, then it's ambiguous. That's not the test. And we have those cases that say, it's the McDonald case where the trial court kept the property in joint tenancy and the judgment wasn't appealed, and the husband went back and said, no, I want to get my property, you know. And the court said, no, we can't change property. We can only look at maintenance, but we can't change property. It might have been a bad decision, but that's what the decision is. And that's what we have here. We have somebody trying to have a result-oriented analysis. Get Mr. Dickerson this property. And that's not what the law should be doing. And I don't want to be saying that we're form over substance or something here, but we do have this 140 acres. We do have this relationship where the parties were married and divorced and remarried, and so we don't know what his intent was. We don't know what he was thinking in 2005 when he died. Who knows what he was thinking? But the property, and what everyone needs to rely upon, is how it's titled. And the correct procedure in this case is to dismiss the divorce action, go back to the partition action, and have this matter resolved as it should have been, and not reopening a case in which all the parties are deceased. The other thing, you know, I really am concerned about ambiguity being used in terms of the word personal property. Judge Smith clearly knew personal property and real property. He could have put in the term real property. He chose not to. So if he made a mistake, so be it. But we are bound by his decree, and no one appealed it.
Well, was there any need to transfer any real property if it was just a matter of extinguishing the lien by making the payments? Assuming what he focused on was the lien interest. That would have been extinguished by the making of the payments, so there was no need to transfer the property at that point.
If her name wasn't on it, that lien was on.
That's what he seemed to have thought, yes.
So that's what I'm saying. If he made a mistake, and it wasn't appealed, we're stuck with it. Thank you.
Thank you both for your arguments this afternoon. This case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course.